is a special Mackinac Policy Conference edition of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. The best electricians, the best contractors, period. Now from the Yankee Rebel Tavern, here's Ken Rogalski.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight's edition of Powering Michigan's Future comes to you live from the Yankee Rebel Tavern here on Mackinac Island during the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference. Get ready for an information-packed hour, because tonight we'll discuss many of the proposed initiatives for our region and talk with the leaders of what's being done to move Michigan forward. Our guests tonight include Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle, Major General Clark LeMasters with the U.S. Army TACOM, Tank and Automotive Command, Dr. Paul Rogers with TARDIC, the Tank Automotive Research and Development Engineering Center, and Matt Walsh with HAP, Gary Bolak with Henry Ford Macomb Hospital, Tom Mittelbrun with the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan, and of course, Michael Richard, Business Manager of IBEW Local 58, and many, many more of the region's movers and shakers. Stay tuned for WJR's Powering Michigan's Future live from the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference, only on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to the Yankee Rebel Tavern on Mackinac Island for more of Powering Michigan's Future. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. Once again, here's Ken.
Good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live tonight from the Yankee Rebel Tavern here on Mackinac Island during the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference. It's become an annual tradition with us. And one of our annual guests is Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle. How you been?
I'm doing good, Ken. I'm so thankful that WJR has partnered with us here on the island to really get the word out on what's going on within the region, and in particular some of the initiatives I think that we're doing in Macomb County. So we can't thank you enough. We use this as an opportunity to really showcase and market the county, and to ensure people that we want to make the initiatives regional and focus on not only that, but how it can carry out throughout the state.
This has been, what, our fourth, fifth year together we've done this?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good question. I think it is about the probably fourth or fifth.
Fourth,
you're right.
Fifth, yeah. Yes. So what's happening in Macomb County these days? I hear a lot.
There is a lot going on. You know, I try to stay on the issues that are more high profile and exciting to really promote the county, and that's what we want to focus on. You know, and sometimes the questions or concerns will start to drift into, you know, the political side of things. And when they do, you know, you just got to hit them head on. So, but for the most part, tremendous amount of investment happening in the county. Well, we're seeing, as I mentioned before, the big three have all invested $1 billion, you know, for their advancements of what they're doing in the county. And most recently, we opened up Jimmy John's Field, which is a minor league independent baseball league over on Hall Road in the city of Utica.
And I hear you're packing them in.
What a fabulous site. I mean, Andy Appleby did an incredible job. Mayor Jackie Noonan, who's the one that really helped pull this together, along with our staff and the MEDC, they did a great job of bringing this facility together. If anybody ever saw this, they would realize really what it is. It's a culmination of thoughts and ideas that Andy Appleby had had for many, many years. And he decided to, you know, what he knows now, bring back in time. If he were a child, what would he like to see? And the facility he created, I can't even explain it to you, the renderings of it when they brought the proposal to the city's city council meetings. Did not do it justice, because what you see today is far beyond fabulous.
I mean, you drive through there, you have to do a double take. It's like a Major League Baseball stadium in downtown Utica.
It is. It's a minor league stadium. We understand that. It's going to create a tremendous amount of economic development to the city of Utica. It's a not only a Macomb County asset, it's a regional asset, one that is going to put the city of Utica on the map. But it's a small little town, but I'm going to tell you, the mayor, this is going to be somewhat of her legacy, but the real legacy of the mayor in that city is one where she is a true public official that cared about her city and wanted to see something lasting in the future. You know what's really interesting? Most people don't realize it, and I just thought about that because I always talk about it. Before the first pitch was thrown out, that field was a tremendous success. Why? What they did is they remediated a former landfill site. There was nothing built on that site for the past 80 years.
It was a dump?
It was a dump. Like most dumps back in the 80s and beyond, people thought that, you know, the solution to pollution was dilution. So they would dump things either into the water or near the water. And that's exactly what happened. That was a dump site right near the Clinton River. So what we were able to do is work with Brownfield Development, the DEQ, working with the state of Michigan to remediate that. the shoreline to the Clint River, as well as the actual site itself. And so before they even threw out that first pitch, we took care of an environmental issue and rectified that. And now you're seeing this beautiful facility on top of that. It is absolutely an amazing feat on behalf of the public, private sector, doing something on behalf of the public.
You know, it's hard to believe we're almost halfway through the year already. It's just flown by. So what have you got in plan? What have you got in store for the rest of the year for Macomb County?
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things. There's news talking about Cabela's that might be coming to Macomb County. We're
really?
Very close. Yes. I give credit to the supervisor in Chesterfield Township. He is doing an incredible job of trying to lure that development, and it looks like it might be happening. It's right near I-94 and Hall Road. They're close, and there's talk about July doing some kind of a groundbreaking. The thoughts are it could be a 90,000-square-foot Cabela's. So normal footprint is about 70,000. This will be incredible for me because I don't have to drive down to Dundee to do my shopping for that. So
it always comes home, doesn't it?
It is. I mean, the 59 corridor has become somewhat a destination, if you will, in Macomb County, all the shopping and entertainment and eateries. It's an exciting area right now in Macomb County.
And there's more to come. Mark, can you hang with us?
I absolutely will. You can.
Great.
Love it.
You're listening to Powering Michigan's Future live from the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference. I'm Ken Bergolski on Newstalk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to the Yankee Rebel Tavern on Mackinac Island for more of Powering Michigan's Future. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. Once again, here's Ken.
Welcome back to WJR's Powering Michigan's Future live from the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference. We've been talking to our old friend, Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle. We're now joined by Dr. Paul Rogers, Executive Director for Research and Technology and Integration for TARDIC, the Tank Automotive Research Engineering Center.
I got it right.
And General Clark LeMaster, Commander for the U.S. Army TACOM, Tank and Automotive Command, the Cycle Management.
Yes.
Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
And welcome again. Mark, we've been joined by two great leaders in the defense industry, and the defense industry has become a real important part of your economy. Just going up and down Mound Road and Van Dyke, it looks like...
What an incredible cluster of assets, and I say that because I look here today at what just happened with this announcement up on the porch and this signing of a document with the MEDC and Dr. Rogers. We have been talking for the last 5 years about this advantage we have here in Michigan in dealing with the defense industry. And the question becomes, does everybody know or recognize what we have, and how do we protect it? Because we're seeing that there's other states that are trying to grow opportunities when it comes to defense industries. And how do we not only protect it, but grow it? We're the defense capital of the Midwest, according to the actual amount of contracts that are landed here to this area, this region. And I kept thinking, as a new county executive, boy, if this were in somebody's backyard, like a guy named Brooks Patterson, he would be out there marketing, branding, talking about this, and really highlighting it. But yet here in Macomb County, because of our structure of government, we never had somebody that was spearheading this, really getting out ahead of it. So what I realized is, you know what? I guess I'm going to have to try to take the lead, bring those people from the industry together, people from TACOM and TARDIC, getting the state of Michigan to understand. And we came up here with a plan about 2 years ago to get the understanding of what we have. And over that time, we have come to realize that people have come together. We're sitting on something right now with a strategic plan to move this industry forward with a protect and grow strategy that is going to be, for years to come, one that we're confident is going to grow it to become not only the defense capital of the Midwest, but the defense capital of the world. And I say that because these two gentlemen here are really intelligent, understand it, and they're going to help make that become a reality.
Yeah, then that's the new focus you were talking about earlier today.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Rogers, vehicles, cybersecurity is a big deal with the U.S. Army like it is for automakers. How's the new relationship going on with the state of Michigan? How's it going to help protect soldiers in the field?
Well, I think the agreement signed today with MEDC is even broader than cybersecurity, but that is a key aspect of it. And really, that agreement's going to help us reach out to the broader talent pool, both academic and industrial talent within Michigan, and be able to reach those experts that can come in and help us solve problems. The cybersecurity on vehicles is very similar for military as it is for the commercial vehicle system. So we are, both communities are at the ground floor of understanding the threat to our vehicles and also starting to build the competencies in order to address that threat.
And this could be right here in our own backyard in Macomb County.
This is key, and that's under the leadership of Mark and his team through MADCAT. They've really grabbed the ball, and they are moving forward aggressively, and I think this could be a center of excellence in the nation for vehicle cybersecurity.
Major General, thanks for joining us tonight. What are the possibilities, what are the priorities and challenges for the U.S. Army and TACOM going forward in Macomb County now?
For us, it's really just the birth of this plan today, you know, lays out a great strategy. You know, the first step in doing a great plan is seeing yourself, and the steps that the team has taken here in the county is doing that. For us, you know, the challenge is in a constrained environment with resource restrictions that the government puts on us is producing the readiness that we need to. So looking at innovative ways to do the mission that we have at TACOM, in partnership with TARDEC, the contracting center, our program executive officers to provide the equipment that the Army needs. TACOM's responsible for about 65% of the equipment that's in the Army.
Wow.
It's a pretty big mission.
So if it's got wheels on it, eventually it comes through your department.
If it's got wheels, if it's got tracks, if a soldier wears it, if he shoots it, it comes through us.
All here in Macomb County.
All in Macomb County.
Unbelievable. Mark, how's the county supporting the defense industry? Because it's growing like a mushroom.
Well, I look at it as, you know, I become the marketing director for the county for various, I guess, initiatives.
You don't have enough to do.
Well, and that's really one of the big responsibilities. I look at what's going on in Huntsville, Alabama. Down there, they're really growing an industry as well. And what we've come to realize, you got a mayor down there that was really the one spearheading and talking about and getting people rallied around the economic opportunities. With that being said, here in Macomb County, in particular Southeast Michigan, you know, we were the arsenal of democracy. And now we've come to realize this arsenal of innovation is taking place. And yet we don't get out there and promote ourselves and talk about it and really become the cheerleader, champion of it. I realized that is something that I needed to do to talk to, as I mentioned before, those that really wanted help. And talking to the governor and MEDC, they recognized early on, this is something that we need to be a participant in because it is an industry that does exist and can grow. And with that being said, about 2 years ago, they relocated the MEDC Defense Center in Macomb County. They actually brought it down to the location where that that resource is at, the advantage. So that being said, my job is to get out there and figure out, you know, who are those that are the key people within this industry that want to help participate, want to help grow. And I got to tell you, even the people within the industry themselves, those that are making things for the Army, they're so excited to be a partner with us on this right now. And we have all now become ambassadors, if you will. And a guy like Sean Carlson, I tend to look at as the guy that's going to be helping us take the lead with the actual strategy of getting out in front.
Dr. Rogers, can you give us a hint of what's coming down the pipeline without revealing any national secrets that we might be seeing in the not-too-distant future?
Wow, that's a long list. But what's really coming down the pipeline is aggressively going after autonomous systems, autonomous vehicle systems, and we're using it for ground resupply. We're investigating different ways of more efficiently bringing supplies to soldiers in the field by using autonomous vehicles. Along with that comes the cybersecurity and the cyber protection that's necessary on those type of assets.
There have been a couple of news articles lately about how Army supply vehicles are autonomous. They drive themselves with somebody at a joystick. Is that true?
Yes, we have. We've demonstrated from a technology perspective the ability for on-road self-navigation for vehicle systems, and we are working on off-road self-navigation. Two different, very different problems. With the auto industry really going after autonomous systems, that's now bringing the cost of the technologies down to an affordable level. So now we're in a position for the Army to actually be able to field technologies such as autonomous self-driving vehicle systems. And we're figuring out doctrinally how we do that so it is a combat multiplier for our formation. We can manage the risks that come with it.
And with all the automotive experience here in Detroit and all the research going on too, that's got to help both of you guys with the technology that's growing right before our very eyes.
Oh, absolutely. The economy of scale. Things that used to cost us $5,000 for a sensor are now costing us $500 for a sensor, and it's all the economy of scale that the auto industry brings to bear on that problem space, and they are bringing new innovations and solutions to the table that we can now leverage. So as part of the agreement today is key for us to tap into that innovation out of the auto industry.
It's also a very skilled workforce. You know, we share that with the automotive industry, people that think differently outside of defense, the technological side of it, but it's also how you manage all that. The bureaucracy still exists to buy repair parts, to let contracts, and to do all the other things that keep the technology running on the battlefield. That's also very powerful.
So being in Detroit with all this automotive talent running around, it's got to be a big boon for you guys.
It's absolutely. I mean, the reason that TACOM came here in the World War II was that exact reason. You know, it was the arsenal of democracy, and that synergy that exists between the two of us, no matter what the economic turns look like, is very, very powerful. And as Paul said, it's for his business in particular, the sharing, not only that, but also with some of the great institutions of learning that you've got here in Michigan is very powerful.
Mark, going up and down Mound Road and Van Dyke, Detroit was the arsenal of democracy. It helped win World War II. Now you've got General Dynamics, you've got Tardic, you've got TACOM here, you've got BAE Systems. Could this be the new arsenal of democracy, take two or 2.0?
Well, it's always been. I mean, it's always been there, and I think that's the realization. We kind of just took it for granted. You know, I compare it to what we have as our freshwater advantage around the state of Michigan. I don't think sometimes because we see it so often, we're there, we don't realize the economic advantage, the quality of life advantage we have with our freshwater. And then obviously we take it for granted that, you know, we can drink this freely, where other places on the planet don't have that. This industry here, as I look at it, I realize, wow, you know what? There's really nowhere else on the planet do they have what we have, and the cluster of assets in particular, dealing with automotive defense and all the manufacturing, what we're able to do and what we're able to create, the high-tech opportunities that are here. Now the question is, are we going to be able to recruit that talent, educate the talent for these jobs that are here? Because there are plenty of jobs, good-paying jobs, sitting here in this cluster that we're talking about right now.
That music means we have to pay some bills. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ken.
You're listening to Powering Michigan's Future live from the Yankee Rebel Tavern here on Mackinac Island during the Mackinac Policy Conference. More to come on News Talk 760 WJR Detroit.
Welcome back to the Yankee Rebel Tavern on Mackinac Island for more of Powering Michigan's Future. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. Once again, here's Ken.
Broadcasting live from the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference, we continue our conversation tonight, and we say hello and welcome to Matt Walsh, Chief Operating Officer of HAP. Matt, good to have you with us.
Good evening, Ken.
Good to have you. Gary Bolick, Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer, Henry Ford Macomb. You've made Macomb your home.
That's right.
Good to have you here with us, too.
Thanks
for joining us. And our old friend, Tom Manganiello, Order, Work, Cross, and Judd, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Ken. It's great being back.
But good conference for you guys so far overall?
Very good.
Great. Very good.
Matt, let's start with you. What's the value of a proposition provider-owned health care plan?
Well, that's a good question, Ken. I think that as a provider-owned health plan, we have a unique sense of how to ensure that the provider-patient relationship is maintained. We try to provide seamless access to care and really let the patient and the doctor manage the care. This includes getting direct input from physicians and how we design our insurance products to make sure that we're covering the right things that make it easier for patients to stay healthy and make sure that our coverage is affordable.
Now, what kind of prescription would you write for physicians, healthcare providers, to ensure a sustainable healthcare delivery system for the foreseeable future?
Well, first of all, I'm not a doctor, so I can't write any prescriptions, even though my family all thinks I can because I work in healthcare.
I said, if you could.
I would get some advice, and I think the name of the game going forward is value. You know, Michigan is a little bit unique in that the share of cost that residents of Michigan pay for health care hasn't risen as dramatically as it has in other states, but it's getting there. And as people become more sensitive to the actual cost of health care, they're looking for value. Are they getting out of the care that they pay for the value that they want to get? So for providers, that means creating new ways to work with patients and engage them differently.
Do you see patients becoming a little more cost conscious when going to the doctor now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're asking the questions. What's it going to cost me? Is that the right thing to be doing? They're using the internet to do research on their own. So we have to be able to provide tools to make sure they can make those right decisions.
Well, at least it's a big change for the better, hopefully.
I think so.
Gary, good to have you with us. Population health is one of the buzzwords that's emerged from the healthcare reform initiative. What's population health and why is it so important?
Well, population health is really, some people will say it's a new buzzword, it actually has its roots back in 2008 as part of the healthcare improvement initiative by Don Berwick. And really what they said is if you improve three components, you will actually improve the healthcare delivery. One of the components was obviously decreasing costs. The other one was improve the patient experience. And the other one was then around decreasing or improving the healthcare of your population that you serve. So really what it was saying is 80% of the ailments that people have are really related to things that we can control, whether it's use of alcohol or tobacco or drugs, looking at physical activity, looking at the environment such as water and air. If you can address those, you can help your population, which will then decrease your overall costs.
They're also saying now that people going to a doctor for a yearly physical is another road to help you guys reduce costs and keep patients healthier and living longer.
That's very true. A lot of folks think they're invincible, and maybe that might be true when you're young.
Especially when you're young.
When you're young. But as you get older, age is going to catch up to you. So having a physician help you manage that aging process and actually give you some direction, because you might have some pretty bad habits that are going to help contribute to a less than quality life. You need someone helping you with that.
People continue to get sick. They need health care. They need insurance. They need to provide access for doctors and hospitals. What will be different with the focus of population health?
Well, I think what you're seeing is organizations, healthcare organizations, working together with the community a little differently than in the past. Before it was, I'm going to take care of a patient one at a time. And right now, the hospitals and healthcare systems are working on how do I improve the care of a population, whether it's through education or whether it's through active intervention. You know, at Henry Ford, we work very hard on how do we take care of our patients that are addicted to drugs. You know, we look at how do we work with our patients that have, you know, weight issues, looking at patients that have chronic lung disease, you know, how do we help them understand, you know, how to take care of their breathing issues. So there is a lot of things that hospitals are doing. Instead of focusing one patient at a time, it really is focusing on the care of a population.
And that's a big change for the
better. It is.
Good. Tom, good to have you with us from North Warner, Norcross, and Judd.
Great to be here.
You look just the way you look on the radio. Love your commercials.
Yeah.
How are you seeing the healthcare market these days?
Don't ask me.
I just did.
My whole practice is focused on automotive, so they're great healthcare customers, but and insurance customers. But now we do have a healthcare practice, that's not my bag.
But the automotive business is going through the roof these days. We haven't seen this kind of growth in 10 years, 12 years?
It's phenomenal. And I was really pleased to attend this year's conference because a substantial portion of the conference was dedicated to mobility, automotive mobility, autonomous vehicle mobility. We had 23 automotive presidents and CEOs of suppliers up here. We had a roundtable discussion with industry leaders, educators, economic development agencies, because we're really at a precipice. You know, things are going so well in the auto industry, but they are about to change dramatically from traditional vehicles to autonomous vehicles.
And that's the big change.
That's a huge change. And it's a huge change. It's a huge automotive change. It's a huge societal change. And we need we have all the thought leaders in Michigan. And we're in the lead position right now. But California and southern states are really, you know, trying to breathe down our neck. They don't have the critical mass that we have. And what we need to do right now is you know, champion that. There were four great bills just introduced in the House and Senate by Senator Kowal and some others. We're backing those. You know, we've got the M-City facility in Ann Arbor. We're going to build out the, what is going to be called the National Center for, I can't remember exactly the name, but it's the Willow Run Airport.
The old Willow Run place.
That was created in World War II in order to build bombers by Ford with, I think, GM engines. The state is really coalescing behind that. And then, as a matter of fact, all the parts of the state, the MDOT and Mish Auto, which I chair and actually founded, and the MEDC and U of M all came together to form what's a new initiative that's being launched this week, and it's focused on mobility. And they're going to go, I think, to California next week to a trade conference. And it's really exciting times.
What is driving this relentless drive to autonomous vehicles? Is it the fact that we've got the technology, we can do it, or is it a customer-based thing? You know, I've always wanted a car that drove itself.
Okay, it's three things. There's a huge mega trend back to urban centers. People are moving to the urban centers. And they like to have cars, and they like to have transportation.
Look at downtown Detroit.
Exactly. But this is a vehicle. It doesn't sound like a sales pitch for the automotive industry, but a car is a $35,000 to $45,000 purchase that depreciates 11% the day you buy it. It depreciates every year after you buy it, and it's unused 95% of the time. So if you can share that vehicle, in order to share a vehicle, you have to get the vehicle from owner or user to user. So if the vehicle drives itself from my house to your house or my apartment to his apartment, and then both of us can share that, it's huge. But the real issue is safety. We will see an 80% reduction in traumatically induced injuries and deaths because the accident rate will drop by somewhere between 75 and 80%. Some predict 90%.
Wow.
So that's going to have a significant impact. It may have a negative impact on you guys, but it's
nobody going to the hospital.
That's good. I think that could be me.
You can expand your elder care department because people are going to live longer.
Right.
And you can probably decrease the size of your ER.
Right.
So by having a vehicle that drives itself to the next owner, does this cut ownership costs? Does it spread depreciation?
Well, there's all different models. I mean, you can have a company like Uber or Lyft own the vehicles and just subscribe to them the way you do now, but when the vehicle shows up at your house, there's nobody driving. Or you can, like in a senior community, you could have 50 homeowners or apartment dwellers chip in and buy one vehicle.
Wow.
And it just goes through the neighborhood.
But with so many people chipping in to buy a vehicle, is this going to cut down on the number of vehicles that roll off the assembly line?
No, and the reason why, and we featured a kind of a futurist at our conference today, or yesterday, is that the miles ridden or in an autonomous vehicle from the ages of 16 to 25 and from the ages 70 to 90 are going to go up dramatically.
Why?
Because they'll have the ability to use private transportation or shared transportation.
Mm.
So where at age 80, some people might, you know, sell their car and depend on either public transportation or other sources, now they'll have access to an autonomous vehicle. If they're wealthy enough, they'll just own one, and they'll continue to drive.
Now, what about the possibility...
Or ride.
People love to drive a car. Is this going to cut people down loving to drive a car?
No, these cars will have... they'll have two modes. They'll have some will have steering wheels. You'll be able to flip a switch and completely drive your car like a normal car. But when you're on I-75 heading up north, put it on, you know, cruise control.
The future's coming hard and fast. We'll have more on Powering Michigan's Future, broadcasting live tonight from Mackinac Island Policy Conference. And you're hearing it tonight on WJR Detroit.
Welcome back to the Yankee Rebel Tavern on Mackinac Island for more of Powering Michigan's Future. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. Once again, here's Ken.
Our guest list keeps growing and growing and growing, and we're joined tonight by some old friends. Say hello to Tom Middlebrun, Executive Director, National Association, Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan. How you been, Tom?
Good, Kenny. Very good.
Good. I've seen you everywhere at the conference. You have really covered some ground.
Well, that's why we're here. But, Kenny, I have a question to ask you first. When we came over on the ferry, you had your own bicycle. So how many laps?
Oh, three.
Three laps.
Three around the island, one a day. And I'd do it tonight, but I've got a couple of more things to do.
Yes,
But I've been a good boy. I've been around the island, and it's a gorgeous sight. I recommend it to anybody. Mike, good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
It's just like old home time with you.
Yeah, it's going quick. And the funny thing is, it seems like that Paul W. pitcher keeps getting younger and younger every year.
And it keeps getting skinnier and skinnier, too.
Have you noticed that?
We also say hello to Dr. Jim Jacobs from Macomb Community College. Doctor, good to have you with us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You guys have been going through some great growth spurts, too, and a lot of new students coming in and out.
A lot of good things going on at Macomb.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Good to have you here. Tom, first let's start with you. The construction market in southeastern Michigan, how do they feel about the rest of 2016?
I think 2016 is going to be very good, and it looks good for the next couple of years. We're looking at some nice, steady, slow growth.
You know, we talked to an engineer, and we were talking about the number of cranes. I said, you know, the national bird of Detroit should be cranes. Well, they said, that's what we call them. We call them birds now. And there are a lot of birds around downtown Detroit with all the buildings being refurbished, the new hockey arena going up, the new streetcar line going in. I mean, it's like a Detroit we've never seen before.
And it's very nice when you read cranes and you see all these new projects being, you know, talked about. And we're looking very forward to doing those projects as they come into fruition.
Got to be good business for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Michael, good to have you with us. How you feel about the market these days with all the growth going on?
Well, it's great. It's great to be coming back after such a long, long recession. I always say I have the privilege of representing the best electricians on the planet, and it's finally good to get them back to plying their craft and doing what they do best.
They got
to
be happy.
Absolutely, and it's getting better and better. And like you said, to having those cranes there, that's a sweet sight. Looking at that every day coming into the city is a great sight.
Paul and Frank had the governor on this morning, and he was saying that Michigan's unemployment rate is at 4%. You guys got to be at full employment or close to it by now, don't you?
We're getting there. It's for us in construction, we usually lag. We go into the down cycle first, and we come out last. But we're getting there. It's a good, steady, as Tom said, it's a steady growth, and that's what we like to see, a nice, slow, steady progression. We get too much volatility, we're in and out, and that list goes up and down.
So it's slow and steady is the way to go, then.
That's the way to go.
By the way, we have to say congratulations to Tom and his wife, Kelly. It's their anniversary tonight.
Right. Congratulations.
I know, right. I'm 2 hours into my 28th year.
He is working on his anniversary, but he's going to make it up to us. Congratulations.
Yes. Yes,
many, many more 28 years for you to come.
Thanks, Ken.
Looking at downtown, career opportunities have to be burgeoning for you guys.
And they are. You know, it was very. You mentioned you had the governor on this morning with Paul W. and Frank. And then in his address today, he was talking about the skilled trades and what a good opportunity it is for these young people who, you know, may not necessarily not want to pursue college. And in our world, the electrical trade, you know, for us, it's very exciting and very interesting. And as I've said all week, these young people get to use their brains and their hands.
And that's a great combination.
Yes.
I don't know about you. When I went to school, I could read a book, but it really wouldn't penetrate. But if I could put my hands on something, like, for example, in chemistry, I got C's. In the lab, I got A's. Because I could put my hands on something, figure out what went where, and I could understand the chemical procedures going on. And I'm wondering if it's the same for your guys, hands-on experience in the trade.
It absolutely is. 10% of it is in the classroom, which is very important to learn electrical theory code and its application, but 90% is working with a skilled journeyman in the field, learning how to actually apply what you've learned in the classroom.
I mean, somebody who's done it for most of his life or her life, I mean, what a tutor to have somebody like that on there.
You couldn't ask for anything better.
Michael, tell us something about the apprenticeship program over at your place.
Well, as Tom said, it's a great opportunity. Not everybody is cut out, or not everybody has the financial means to go right into secondary education. So it's a great opportunity for those that have that solid math background, have a good mechanical skills, natural abilities. They earn from the very beginning. The minute they start, we bring them in the program. They start working with one of our signatory contractors. They're earning a good wage from the beginning. They're building the pension from the beginning, the health care. It's a great opportunity. So we have really three tracks there. We have the big one, that's the five-year program, Journeyman Inside Wireman. That does the auto plants, the large, the arena, the work that's going on there, the large institutional hospital work. And we also have the Sound of Communication. It's a three-year program. They focus more on security access, audiovisual type of things, more of the smart wiring.
Right.
And then we have a three-year residential program, which is pretty self-explanatory. They do all the residential work. So there's three paths that someone could go if they're interested in the industry.
And the important thing is they learn from the first day they're on the job. I don't know too many colleges that pay you to go to college.
No, I tell you, it's great having a good a partnership with the colleges that we do have.
Dr. No offense, but...
No, we have a great relationship with the colleges in the area, and we've been having talks about, you know, we're focusing now on young men and women coming out of high school and making sure they have that algebra background. But we also have that group that maybe didn't get it in high school. And we need good partners in the community colleges to get those math skills that they need and then come into our program. So it's a great fit.
What kind of jobs are we talking about, Mike? Apprenticeship jobs.
Well, it ranges. I mean, we do work at all the auto plants. We service all the auto plants in the industry. Of course, the high profile is the arena. DMC's got some great projects going on now. We've got some projects going on out at the university.
McCormick, yeah,
absolutely. So there's projects going all over, and there's residentials picking up. So first time in a long time, we've got some great opportunities in residential.
All right. What explain a journeyman. I never really understood how that works.
Well, a journeyman is someone who's gone through that training program. In my case, it was a five-year program, and as well as Tom. Once you complete that program and you can take your test in the state of Michigan, you get a journeyman license. I went on after a couple more years of being a journeyman and went back and got my master license.
Wow.
So it's something that you can take with you around the country and really around the world. The skills we're teaching these young men and women, they can take anywhere, certainly in the country, but really I know many of our members that have use their skills around the world, literally, doing, making good money and enjoying life.
I mean, it's almost like a master's degree or a PhD degree in electrician.
Well, by the time I got my master's electrician license, it was about the same. Absolutely.
All that book smart. We say hello tonight to Dr. Tim Jacobs from Macomb Community College. Doctor, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Macomb College has really gone through some growth spurts in the past 10, 15 years. Apprenticeship programs, training programs, the skilled trades, important part of the curriculum at Macomb Community.
Oh, yes. No, more and more. You know, a couple ways. One, we're really proud to work with our colleagues here in the electrical industry and especially in the training center. There are things which they're doing that which are really important for not only their members and for the community, but I think it's important for the whole region because it really shows the kind of growth that we can develop. For us, one of the things that we're very clear about is we need to develop the skill sets of the students who come to us. Now, the students who come to us are coming out of high school. Some of them are coming, you know, who have had other experiences, maybe been in the military,
transfers.
You know, coming back to school, you know, for the first time. Other people maybe making a transition change, you know, single heads of households, etc. So we have to figure out what kind of programs work best with individual students. But one of the things that I think we're very key on, focused on, is that you can learn certain things in the classroom, but you also need to learn certain things at the workplace. And apprenticeship as a process is very important. There's things that you can learn on the job which you cannot learn in the school. Our job is to prepare people so that they can enter these trades and make a big difference. One of the areas that we are really concentrating on in the next couple of years is we got a big grant from the Department of Labor to look at youth apprenticeship, to work with our high schools so that some of the people who are now currently in high school are attending the community college. We got about 1,000 students who are from the Macomb County High Schools enrolled at Macomb. They will graduate from high school and have an associate's degree simultaneously. And,
wow.
And you know, this is a whole, I think one of the things which is really excites me is we're breaking down certain barriers. We're making it very possible for people and their families to have a college education debt-free. So when they leave Macomb, they can go to a four-year school, they can go into work, and they'll be far better off than a lot of people in this country.
That is a powerful, powerful thing to have. Before we run out of time, how was the conference in your eyes, Doctor?
I think the conference has been very good. It's been very good in two ways. One, it's really kind of focused on the recovery and all the positive things that have been happening in the last couple of years in our economy. I mean, it's clear that the automobile industry resurgence has really grown the amount of jobs, I mean, the kind of stuff going on. But it also, and this is the important part, really emphasizes a certain lesson that I think we're learning. And that lesson is cooperation and working together and putting aside a lot of the kind of past, differences is very important for the growth and the momentum and keep moving on this growth in the economy.
Dr. Jim Jacobs from Macomb Community College, good to have you. Mike Richards, IBEW Local 58, an old buddy, good to have you. Tom Middlebrun, what can we say? You guys were fantastic. Great conference for you guys.
Absolutely. Great time.
Be back next year.
Always.
Bring some friends. Good to have you all here tonight. Thank you for joining us. This has been Powering Michigan's Future, live from the 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference, right here on beautiful Mackinac Island. I'm Ken Rogulski. Thanks for joining us on News Talk 760 WJR, Detroit.